Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Super real.
Hey, I'm Julian Morgans, and you're listening to What It Was Like, the show that asks people who have lived through big, dramatic events what it was like. So some of you might remember we did a story about a missing person a few weeks ago, and no, there hasn't been any significant developments. I got a few messages from people basically offering support, but no breakthroughs. So I got thinking, are there any missing person stories where they find the missing person after decades, and that person's alive and they're doing well? Does that ever actually happen? And it's this question that led to today's episode. And apparently the answer is yes, because not only was today's guest previously missing, but he was missing for 33 years, which makes him one of the longest missing children to be recovered anywhere in the world. His name's Steve Carter, and until the age of 4, he was raised in an orphanage in Hawaii. Then he was adopted by Steve and Pat Carter, a couple from the US East Coast, from whom he took his surname. And from there, Steve had a happy childhood, except that his biological parents were a complete mystery. And this became an issue in his 30s, when he and his wife started talking about having kids of their own. It was at this point that Steve started to wonder where he'd come from. And as you'll hear, the answers he found were really shocking. So now I bring you Steve Carter. Hey, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Julian. Appreciate it.
So you were in your 30s. You and your wife decided to have some kids, and this resulted in some conversations about your history. You weren't questioning your own origin story because you were just naturally curious. You were worried about diseases and heritable traits. Is that right?
I would say, yeah, 100%. I mean, I had an amazing childhood. You know, I was adopted and raised by two individuals who were just phenomenal. I do call them my parents. They'll always be my parents. And it wasn't until I started thinking about the next generation that I became very interested in my history and what that would look like.
So if you're curious about your genetic lineage, what happens next?
And then I'll never forget, one day a story popped up on CNN about an individual out of New York who discovered that she was abducted and found out because she went to a website called missingkids.com and put in her information. And sure enough, there was an age progression photo about a girl who was abducted at a young age and kind of resembled what she looked like. And, you know, yeah, I heard it one time when I was getting up, getting ready for work, kind of just didn't pay attention. Then driving into work, it came on the radio 2 or 3 times. And then I got to work, getting notifications on my tablet saying, hey, you know, this is a news story about this woman who found herself and became one of those things where I was like, this has happened too many times today to not kind of lead to something else. So
did it feel like someone was just trying to give you a bit of a nudge? Like, hey, Steve, check out this story.
Yeah, like I showed it to you once. It should have turned into something, but you're still not picking up on it. So here it is 8 more times. I was like, all right. So I kicked everybody out of the office, closed my door, and went to missingkids.com. And, you know, very easy website. Put in my information. It asks for state, sex, and how long you've been missing.
How were you feeling at this time? When you were, so you'd seen this news story 8 times and then you're typing in these words. Were you feeling like excited, or were you feeling like there's no way this is going to come up with anything? What was your emotional state?
I had a feeling that something might pop up, a little anxious. It just kind of felt right for some reason. And I put in the information and I think I just turned 33. So I put that I'd been missing for 32 years, Hawaii male, and hit the search button. And there were a number of kids that popped up, most of them native Hawaiians. And, you know, nobody was really missing as long as I was. So I was like, I gave it a shot. I tried it. You know, that's it. And then I was like, I just turned 33. Let's see what happens. So I put in 33 years. And sure enough, 33 years, the first person that popped up was an individual by the name of Marks, M-A-R-X. The picture looked, oddly enough, just like me. His birthday was one day away from mine, and he'd been missing for the correct amount of time. And when I tell you he looked like me, it was, I would say, 90% spot on. He did have a mullet, and he did have a flannel shirt on. which, you know, if you're living in Hawaii, you're never wearing a flannel. And rarely do you have a mullet. So the face was what really caught me.
But this was a digital image. I mean, how did they have this photo of you?
So they actually took my birth father's photo when he was 26, and then my birth mother's photo when she was 28, took those, combined them, and they took a picture of me when I was 2 months, and then kind of combined everything and did an age progression photo of what I would look like at 28.
Wow. I didn't know that they had that kind of technology back then.
Yeah, it's amazing. So the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children does all this work. And I actually met the gentleman, I believe his name is Greg, who did that photo for me. And the first thing I said to him, I was like, really? You gave me a mullet? And he's like, did you recognize yourself? I was like, well, yeah. He goes, well, then screw off. And I was like, all right, fair enough. Like, yeah, you did nail it. Nice job.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Don't pull Greg up on the details. So you've seen this digital image of yourself, and you found this missing person report that really matches your own story. What was that like?
I mean, I was definitely taken aback. And this was back, I don't want to date myself, but this was back in the days of when everybody had GChat. So I was sitting on my computer. Copied the image, pasted it into chats with all my friends, and was like, who does this look like? But everybody was like, no, that's definitely you. It looks 100% like you. You know, I called these individuals, or they called me, and they're like, what is this? I'm like, it's a missing person. And I sent them a link. They read the story. They're like, holy crap. Like, this is crazy. Like, this is you? I'm like, yeah, like, this is me. And everybody's like, oh, you know, it's funny because there's definitely a difference between people that have kids and people that don't have kids. People that don't have kids are like, oh, that's crazy, man. Awesome. You know, oh, that's such a great story. And then people that have kids are like, you know, pick up the phone right now and call the cops. Your parents are still looking for you. Mm. And, you know, at the time I didn't have kids. And so I was kind of in that camp that was like, ah, it's a cool story. You know, I'll just sit on it, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But then I sent the picture to my mom and called her, you know, took 10 minutes to walk her through how to open an email and look at a picture. And, you know, she's looking at it. She's like, you know, what am I looking at? What am I looking at? I'm like, mom, that's a missing person. She's like, oh my God. And at one point she said, have you called the police yet? I'm like, no, I haven't really decided yet. My mom was like, oh, you know, it's up to you if you want to call the police. Just, you know, just be careful who you tell. So I was like, all right. You know, finally my wife gets out of work. I tell her the story. She's like, oh my God, it's crazy. What are you going to do? I'm like, I'm not really sure. And after talking it over with her, we decided that calling the police would be the right thing to do. You know, especially if this family was still out there looking for me, because they were quite active in putting together all the documentation to help find myself and my birth mother. So, you know, called the police. I think the time in Hawaii was probably, you know, 2-3 in the morning. I was like, hey, this is Steve Carter. I believe I might be Mark Spam on Moriarty Barnes.
When you called the police, what was their reaction?
No, it was funny there. You know, it took them a while to get back to me. The guy was kind of really flippant about it. He's like, well, it looks like everybody's finding themselves on the East Coast. I was like, okay. I'm like, sorry, buddy. I was like, I think this might be me. I don't mean to, you know, screw up your lunch or your surfing break, but, you know, kind of walked him through everything. He's like, all right, yeah, well, you know, we'll be in touch with you. And I was like, okay, ball's in your court. You know, fast forward probably a month after that, they were like, hey, yeah, we did a little more research. Would you mind going to the state police and giving a DNA test?
Okay.
And I was like, sure. And that's kind of when I went down to the state police, did the DNA test, and that was it. I didn't hear back for probably 3 to 6 months after that.
Okay. Did you sort of come to terms with it in your mind?
So now I'd kind of taken on like kind of a guilt factor because I felt like I should have been doing more to alert these people that were looking for me. Not only am I safe, but I'm extremely happy. You know, I've got great friends, amazing family. I've lived a life that only certain people can, because
yeah.
When I bring it up to mom after, I was like, mom, you know, people like me, we slip through the cracks every day. And she's like, you slipped up, you lucky son of a bitch. So I just wanted to let them know that I was safe and they shouldn't be worried about what's happened to me.
Yeah. Okay. So how did you find out the results of the DNA test?
So I got a call from the Hawaii Police Department alerting me to the fact that I was indeed Mark's mom and that I had family on both sides searching for me, and that somebody from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children would be reaching out to speak with me to facilitate a meeting, if I wanted to, between myself and the family.
Okay. All right. So set the scene. Tell me about this phone call.
So the first call was with Jenny, who is my sister on my mom's side. She's 8 years older than me, and she was Charlotte's first child.
As in your mother, Charlotte?
Yes.
So your half-sister and then you?
Yep. So, you know, I gave Jenny a call, introduced myself, and we probably talked for hour and 15 minutes.
Did you find that you guys had unexpected similarities? You know, did you like the same music? Did you have similar life experiences? Was sharing genetic code enough to make you kind of similar people?
I mean, we definitely shared a lot of similarities, not just saying, you know, genetics-wise, you know, we do kind of look very similar. You know, we do kind of share the same taste in certain things. Same kind of sense of humor. I would say it took more time to really fully understand that. That initial phone call just kind of brought out that top layer.
Yeah.
It took a couple of years to really better understand our similarities.
Was it an emotional phone call?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah? For both of you?
Yeah. You know, because it's funny because I've, you know, told my wife, I really want kids. And the reason I want kids, it'll be my first blood relative, right? Growing up and only adopted child, you've got no real blood relatives. And then boom, right before we get married and have kids, it turns out that I've got a very large extended family. So that was quite an emotional phone call.
Yeah. I can imagine. All right. So you get off the phone to your half-sister, and what happens next?
I go into the kitchen. I pour 2 shots of Jim Beam, and then I dial my birth father's number.
Oh,
yeah. So I call Mark Barnes. The only thing I know about Mark Barnes at the time is that he's 6'5". And now I tell you that 6'5" because I am 5'12 in heels. And I feel like I was cheated out of a lot of stuff if he's 6'5". So I call him and Mark answers the phone and I say, hi, Mark, you know, this is Steve Carter. You might know me as Marks. And he goes, hey, nice to meet you, Steve. How's your mom doing? And I was like, I was going to ask you the same question. And he's like, well, what do you mean? And I was like, well, I don't know Charlotte. I have no idea who she is. I've never met her. He's like, wait, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, I thought she kidnapped you and raised you. I was like, nope, I was raised in an orphanage and then adopted by my parents. He's like, oh my God. So it was a much different conversation than what I had with Jenny.
Did he tell you the story of the last time that he saw you?
Yeah. So, you know, he and Charlotte, they met on a beach. He was coming back from Vietnam, was a journalist there. They met on a beach, then ended up shacking up together, living in a house in Haula, which is on the North Shore. Fun fact, that house has been on the news twice. Once for my story, and then once when Dog the Bounty Hunter kicked in the door to find a bunch of meth heads. So it's very famous location. But he and Charlotte had a very tumultuous relationship. I found out details later from letters that were sent to me by one of my aunts. But, you know, his recollection was, you know, Charlotte would take off for days at a time and then come back. You know, they would fight. They were just very different people. Charlotte was more of a, I would say, free spirit, an artist, if you will. You know, Charlotte and I went for a walk. My stroller was found at a bus stop. And that's the last time anybody's really heard of Charlotte Moriarty or Mark Spanimo.
Hey, we're just going to stop here for a quick ad break. But stick around. We'll be right back with more What It Was Like.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
So if I can just clarify that, your mom basically took you for a walk in a stroller, saying that she was going to just pop out, she'll be back later, and she disappeared, and you disappeared, and your dad didn't hear from you for several decades.
Correct. So, and he did not report us missing for 2 weeks. So he, in his recollection to me, was he supposed that Charlotte took me, we flew to New Mexico, which is where Charlotte's ex-husband lived, and we were visiting them, and, you know, we'd be back. We didn't return in 2 weeks. You know, he called the police and said, hey, my wife has been missing now for 2 weeks, and this is kind of out of the ordinary. And so that's when he became suspect number one.
Right, okay. So he didn't report you missing because he was worried that he might be a suspect?
I don't think he was worried. I think he was just like, oh, you know, she's gone. She'll be back. They always come back. And then 2 weeks goes by. He's like, well, she's not back. So he called the police and told them that his wife and child had been missing for 2 weeks and wasn't sure where they were.
Okay. All right. So was that when the missing person report was first filed and some ads went up?
So I think a missing persons report was filed and that was about it. And I don't really know much of the details post that. Just that years later, they tried to have, you know, they hired a psychic to find Charlotte and I. And the psychic had said that we were murdered and buried on a mountain on the North Shore. And then the Moriarty family tried to have Charlotte and I declared dead, which they kind of did. And there's actually a memorial stone in Chicago at Millennium Park that says for Char and Marks together forever, yada, yada, yada. So they did attempt to have us declared deceased.
Damn. Okay. All right. So then your dad wouldn't have known this, but you know now, like what happened after your mom kidnapped you?
So there's a lot of kind of missing pieces, but if you were to take the most obvious route, there is a woman found in a house in Honolulu with a child who is, you know, malnourished, crying, inconsolable. Well, the police come, take her out, take her and the child to Honolulu Hospital. The woman is put in psychiatric care. The child is put in child protective services. And that's when Tenzin Amale first is kind of brought to the scene. Tenzin Amale is a native Hawaiian. His birthday is January 16th, 1977.
Okay. And this was your first identity that you were given immediately after state intervention?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Please continue.
Yeah. So given this new identity, this new ethnicity and a new birthday, and, you know, I'm left in child protective services. And then after, I believe, a couple of weeks, I was put into an orphanage and would be there until I was adopted.
Okay, all right. So just to loop back a little bit, so your mom basically took you and, I mean, if you were found malnourished, she obviously was not doing a great job of looking after you. And she was obviously doing such a bad job that the police noticed. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Finding out about it when I was 33, I have kids now and you know, it does take a lot to take care of them. And if you're not in the right headspace and you're dealing with other things, you might put the oxygen mask on yourself first before you put it on the person next to you. So, yeah, you know, I can't blame her for anything. I know that hindsight being 2020, probably not the best decision, but I made it out to where I am now.
Tell me about what all of this meant for your wife, because, you know, when you marry someone, you really buy in to their life, their genetics, their past, their everything. Do you have any insights on what this all meant for her?
You know, she is a great woman, supports me, directs me, tells me when to show. Well, I can tell you this, it's made her more cautious with our children. So, okay. You know, like when we travel, her kids dress exactly the same. So that way, if one of them goes missing, we can say they look like this, right?
Wow. So, okay.
Yeah, there's certain things that she's picked up along the way regarding safety for children that she has then incorporated into our daily life. But no, she's been fantastic. I'd say the one that really took it the hardest is my mom. When this whole thing actually occurred, she actually had a mini stroke and was in the hospital for about a week.
Oh, really? Like an actual stroke?
Yeah. I think it really hit her. You know, she wanted to make sure that people knew that she wasn't the kidnapper. Like they did not steal me. You know, this was all legal. They followed all the procedures.
I feel sorry for her. Okay. So tell me about meeting some of your family members, your sister, your dad.
We met Jenny in Philadelphia. She came with her father. We met them at a restaurant and kind of just talked and connected. And, you know, it was, say, cathartic for both of us.
How was that first moment where you sort of saw each other across a restaurant and you're like, oh my God, it's me, but a woman. And, you know, was there that kind of moment?
And it definitely was because, you know, if you see a picture of her, we definitely have similarities. So it was kind of a surreal moment. I think the loss of her mother hit her a lot harder than it's hit me. And, you know, for obvious reasons, right? So she actually spent time with her. She knew her intimately. You know, I can only imagine losing my mother. It would be heartbreaking.
So your mom, when she kidnapped you, and she never came back. She disappeared.
She disappeared.
And no one has any idea to this day where she's gone.
So after all this was discovered and the stories came out, my aunt on my birth mother's side reached out to me and shared a number of letters that her and Charlotte had shared back and forth for about a year and a half up until my disappearance. And reading through those letters was both interesting and horrifying. But in the last letter, which is, I believe, probably maybe a week or two before I went missing, she talks about that, you know, she doesn't want to be a mother, that if she shaved her head, nobody would recognize her. And then kind of just signs off on that. And that was the last letter.
So can I ask the contents in the letters? They were horrifying because there was sort of like there was anger directed at her children and at you, or was it sort of like suicidal kind of depression stuff?
I would say it's a combination of a number of things. The drug use was kind of eye-opening and might explain my shortened height.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm guessing Hawaii in the 70s is like a bit of a Wild West. You know, heroin was pretty popular back then, things like that.
Not really heroin. No. I would say more acid, marijuana.
Okay.
Those kind of drugs.
Okay. So you read these letters and you think, so you think that she's still alive, or you think that she's just shaved her head for, you know, 30 years and has disappeared?
If I were to take a guess, I would say she passed probably 20, 30 years ago.
Okay. And I know that this is a sort of sensitive stuff that I'm asking you here, but if you had to guess, what do you think might have happened?
I think she went to East Asia and, you know, got caught up in kind of that lifestyle and passed away there. She was forever the free spirit, always wanted to, you know, kind of have a good time. And I think she found it.
Mm. What do you feel for your birth mother?
Great question. Not really sure how to answer. You know, again, it really comes down to the fact that how does one feel about somebody they've never met, that they've only heard stories about, and they've got no real connection. It's nothing that really impacted my day-to-day. I wasn't pining over finding out who my parents were. I was content with the life I had.
Got it. I mean, I know before that you said you're a dad yourself. You know how hard it can be. But there's a flip side of that where of course, when you become a mother or a father, you sort of experience all these tiny little miracles. And it's a pretty profound experience. I mean, I've got a little daughter, so I'm just sort of reflecting on my own experience. I guess what I'm saying is parenthood sort of sucks, but it's magical. And my thinking is that I could never give her up. Like, it would ruin my life if I did that. And I wonder if you've had similar thoughts and like, what does that mean for the way you view your mother or the way you were raised?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because literally, I think it was maybe 2 minutes ago while I was talking, one of my daughters came in and passed me a note that says, good night.
It's a little blue note for anyone who's listening that just says good night with a picture of a moon.
Yeah. So I was dumb enough to have Irish twins. So my kids are 12 months apart.
Yeah.
I've got two girls. And,
okay.
You know, after having kids of my own and looking at kind of the work my dad did to find me on an island of the size of Oahu, which if you think about it, is probably, you know, the size of South Jersey. Chris, I couldn't imagine, you know, losing one of them. Much like you said, it changes everything about you. You know, prior to having my two girls, I had a dog. His name was Choppers. He was amazing. Coolest dog in the world. And I couldn't imagine life without him. And then I had two kids and I was like, I just wish this freaking dog would die. He barks and wakes up my girls like he's killing me. And then, you know, when he did pass, I cried like a baby. But, you know, kids change everything about everything. You know, but I also think that I was 35 when I had kids. If I had kids at 26 and they were still alive, they'd probably be badasses because they would have had to fought for themselves for a lot of that time. So I think there's something to be said for kind of maturity and having children and then having children in your...
Yeah, I relate to that as well. I knew people who were having kids early 20s as well, 22, 23. Some of them nailed it. Some of them were great parents.
But, oh, yeah.
But that wasn't me. I would have been a disastrous parent in my early 20s. And I guess your dad was a Vietnam vet as well. So he was probably dealing with some of his own shit.
No, 100%. And, you know, and I think dealing with Charlotte was also a challenge. She, again, I call it a free spirit. There's other words that could be used. From what I've heard, during the first 2 weeks or month of me being born, she wore a blindfold 24/7. So she could better get to know me as a spirit and connect with me, which if my wife were blindfold during the first month of our kids being born, I'd probably be divorced because you can't really change a diaper with a blindfold on and you can't read a book and you can't put him to bed. So, you know, just different times. But, you know, I definitely think that, you know, he was, you know, younger in a different position. And I don't even know if they wanted to have a child, which is also much different than, you know, my wife and I, who were dying to have kids.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So have you met your blood father?
Unfortunately, he passed away last year. So while we did talk on the phone, exchange letters, I unfortunately never got to meet him in person.
Damn. Yeah, right. And so had you become close with your dad before he died?
No.
No.
So, you know, I'm not going to really share the skeletons in the closet, but, you know, he did have some substance abuse problems, even in his late 60s.
Sure.
So wasn't that conducive to a relationship? No, yeah. You remember what it was like when you had kids, like, imagine having back-to-back kids. It was like, you know, SEAL training.
All right, I've really got one last question for you. So, I came to this story because we did another missing person story a couple of weeks ago. It was a guy who's never showed up. The question was, how often do people actually show up, especially after several decades? And your case feels anomalous on several levels. First of all, you're successful, happy. It's quite a good story. It's an upbeat, positive story. Do you have any reflections on the flip side of this? The missing people who don't show up, they're sort of victims of murder. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
I can tell you there are some truly sad stories. And working with Micmac, you'll hear a lot of them. And, you know, a lot of the times people wait years and years and years to find that person. Usually when they do find that person, is deceased or has been abused or is just not in a good space. But I can tell you that, you know, I'll never forget, we were taking a bus ride back from the Hope Awards down in D.C., the hotel, and one of the women actually was sitting behind me, said, wait, you're Steve Carter? She's like, I can't tell you how much your story has given us hope that we will find our child. And their child's been missing for 22 years. And at the same time, I've heard stories about people who have found their kids that they think have passed or have been missing that end up being with a relative. I couldn't imagine it with my own children. I try not to. It still scares the crap out of me. But at the same time, for anybody that is or going through dealing with a missing loved one, always have hope. And there is a chance that person is doing well and will surface again to be reunited with you.
Yeah. Steve, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
No, Julian, I really appreciate it. Thank you again for the opportunity. And thank you.
I want to finish with a big shout out to our intern, Evie Atkins, who tracked down Steve and therefore made this episode possible. Evie, you're awesome. Thank you. If you've enjoyed today's episode and you're thinking, hey, I've got a story that's pretty cool, something that could work for this show, you know, something interesting but surprising, a little bit unique, please get in touch, hit me up. I'm always looking for story suggestions or feedback or, you know, whatever you got. I'm Julian Morgans on Instagram and Morgans Julian on X. And you know what? We'd love you to follow the show. You know the follow button on whatever your podcast app is. Just press that. We'll be eternally grateful. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. Just a simple 5 stars should do it. You don't even have to overthink it. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Tuffery. It was edited and mixed by Nicholas Feliciano. Jimmy Saunders did our theme music. Our cover art is by Naomi Lee Beveridge. And this whole thing has been a Superreal production.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.